Hey everybody, good morning and welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon podcast. I am here with two of my very favorite people at 8 a.m. on a Monday, my time. I don't know what we were thinking.
It's Modem in the AM.
Sounds like a radio show. I love it. I'm here with Sarah Century and Stephanie Williams. And the two of you, I believe, know each other somewhat.
We've known each other for actually since the old sci-fi fangirls days, which feels like 100 years ago now, but it was not that long ago. We got to know each other, right? And correct me where I'm wrong, but it was basically because we both really like these weird deep dive characters. And
That is
so,
correct. Yes, I
yep.
was like,
And
I found my person. Because
it.
now I don't have to feel like a weirdo talking about these little strange and unsung all stars.
Because not everybody knows it, right? Like people were like big into a lot of things, any number of things that maybe I didn't know about. But there was, it was, I remember very specifically us be that Modam is the exact kind of character we would have had a chat in the Slack about, basically.
I love that version of that story. And Stephanie, that tells you, it tells me, I mean, I knew this about Sarah already, but it tells me more about Stephanie as well. This love for deep characters that get brought back because you brought back Modem, which we'll get to in a little while. I would love to have you both introduce yourselves, assuming our listeners do not know you already. I know I've had Stephanie on the show a few times and Sarah many, many times. If you'll start, Stephanie, tell everybody a little about yourself. And I'd love to hear, as we start, what your very favorite thing about the character of Modem is.
Again, Stephanie Williams. I am a comic book writer, among a few other things. You might know me from Nubia in the Amazons, Nubia Queen of the Amazons, most recently Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Wreck and Roll. But I just love all things weird when it comes to comics, especially superhero comics, like Modam, a character who I, when I went to do her history, I was like, oh wait, she doesn't really have a history. So yes, let's get into this. I love her because there is a Captain America like story arc that involves her and a bunch of other baddies, and I think the woman's name is Suspiria, and
Yes.
she was like, hey,
Superior, yes.
Superior, let's get rid of all men and make the world great again. And I said, okay, well, come on, James Bond villain, let's get into this. So that's something I love. I mean, I even love Nightshade because she turned Cap and Sam into wolves at one point or another. So that's a little bit about me.
We're recording this in early July. Just yesterday, I recorded my monthly maxi episode, which is the character trial. And we did it on the characters Necra and Nightshade with a jury all of people of color. It was an incredible conversation. I love her very much.
I'm Sarah Century. I have a podcast called Best Issue Ever that is just people talking about their all-time favorite comics. So that's been a blast so far. And it is my favorite. I love to talk to people about the things that they love. But also, I am a horror creator across several different mediums. Right now, easily you can pick up my book, A Small Light and Other Stories, which is a collection of short stories that are scary and gay. And also lots of other anthologies that I'm in. I'm in a lot of the weird punk anthologies that come out. I love MODOK, but I love a character that is so bizarre because even in the Marvel universe where you have a million weird characters, I feel like when MODOK or MODEM enter a room, you hear like the theremin starts playing and you hear like wee woo, and it's like just I love it. I love the hatefulness. I love that no there's no act of human kindness in this creature, and I think that it's just so rad. I love her just because she shows up to cause chaos, and she is kind of the fill-in MODOK, right? Which like is funny because they were like, look, we need a MODOK in here, and MODOK's dead apparently. So I love her for that, and just the fact that she's a spiteful little shit.
I really love this character for two reasons. Number one, in May on my show, we recorded the trial of MODOK. I was just referencing trials. It's a long 2.5 hour episode where I read his whole history. We had a deep analysis of horror comics and kind of what he represents, how he's like all of the characters in the Frankenstein novel at the same time. He's the doctor, the monster, and Igor all at once, depending on the story you're reading. We also talked about his many, many, many variants, and I love a clunky acronym. Anytime we get to do a clunky acronym, it makes me me smile. But back when I worked on the Marvel handbooks, and I've referenced this on the show a few times, but I've never told this particular story, I wanted to branch into writing comics and not just the encyclopedias. And I came up with four full pitches that I wrote and submitted to editors at Marvel. And ultimately, they told me, you got to go make a name for yourself elsewhere first, which made complete sense. But I wrote four full form stories. One of them was what I called Ultron Origins, or like Avengers Ultron Origins. When Ultron first appears, we see that little vacuum cleaner version of him, Ultron 1, and then he comes back as Ultron 5. And I'm like, ooh, let's tell the story of the early Ultron prototypes. And one of the big reveals in the story was what really happened to Hank Pym's forgotten wife, Maria Trevelyan, which is a story that has since been told because we now have the character Nadia Van Dyne. But I spent a ton of time researching that, and Nadia is connected to Modom, which is an interesting thing. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Modom herself, I love for a lot of reasons. I think when you have an ugly man in the room, everybody kind of just expects that he's still going to get hit on by pretty girls and he's just going to have like whatever storyline. When you have, and my phraseology is rough here, but when you have an ugly woman in the room, it's almost a societal expectation that she's going to hate herself or like not be a success and that like no one will be interested in her. Modom, I think we can qualify as an ugly woman. I know that's a rough thing to say, but she does her best. She has her makeup on and her laser blasters and her crazy chair, and she's just living her fucking life and she doesn't give a shit what any of you think. And I love that. She just has that kind of storyline that defies expectations in a way that we don't often expect from monstrous women in our comic books. What are your thoughts on the design and appearance of Modom? Because that's where we start with this character.
I loved it. I mean, she because like it would be weird, given how MODOK looks, if they decided to glamify Modam. Like, I'm glad that they didn't go that route. Although I think Hector did draw a version of Modam glammed up just because I wanted to see what that looked like, and it was still very funny. But she did have her acrylics, which I did appreciate. No, I love that for her design, they decided to just kind of make her sort of this carbon copy of MODOK as far as looks went, because yeah, it would have been weird if she was there with like kind of like this hourglass shape, but still had the really big head while sitting in this chair with her lasers and everything else.
I mean, that's where she started.
Yeah.
Sarah, what are your thoughts on Modam's appearance?
So, yeah, she looks great. No notes. Like, frankly, I mean, yeah, when she first shows up and it's just like the lady with the huge brain, I love it. Comics, what the hell? That's
Just
how I feel.
ridiculous body horror. The other
Yeah.
thing I love is a clunky acronym. Do you guys have a favorite,
Yes.
just stupid acronym from comics?
Isn't AIM already pretty silly? And
I
then
mean,
you just
yes.
like AIM is like gives birth to a million other silly acronyms. So it's almost like the queen bee of
Well, and
acronyms.
MODOK is another one, and it's become like
Yeah.
a pun where now we have BRODOK and, like a thousand different versions of that. It's delightful. Stephanie, do you
Yeah.
have a favorite?
I do, but it's one that's not Marvel canon. But I was hoping that it would be after the Nightshade story, and it's for Modam, but now it's mental organism designed for aggressive mothering. But so
I think that's phenomenal. MODAM
yeah.
stands for Mental Organism Designed for Aggressive Maneuvers, which is separate from MODOK, which is the mental organism designed only for murder or for killing. I don't know where murder comes from.
Yes.
My favorite acronym in comics is Ultimatum, which is Flag Smashers Group, which stands for the Underground Liberated Totally Integrated Mobile Army to Unite Mankind. That's my favorite Marvel fact that I carry in my brain, that stupid clunky acronym. They're trying so hard to make it happen. Sarah and I just did the Victoria Hand episode where she's like, "What does Hammer stand for?" And Norman Osborn's like, "Figure it out, Victoria." Like it's the early days of Hank Pym are very seldom read, I think, by comic fans. Even if you love Hank Pym, you got to go back and read the old original Ant-Man stuff, and there's some crazy stuff. And it's very early 60s where there's almost a forgettable throwaway story that talks about his first wife to a Hungarian woman named Maria Trevelyan and how she and her father went missing and/or were killed in their adventures in Hungary, which is such a crazy place for that story to be set. You see him battle a whole bunch of ridiculous old villains like the Beasts of Berlin and the Voice of Doom and the Hijacker. There's a guy that plays the trumpet There's a bunch of crazy old stories. Are you guys very familiar with those old Ant-Man stories? I love them so much.
Yeah, that's back when Janet isn't quite Janet yet. So I always am
No.
like, ugh, this is like the not cool yet Janet. But she still is pretty fun. I read it. I like Ant-Man. That's probably Hank Pym's best era, frankly, because
I mean, honestly.
he's like fails upward for the rest of his trajectory.
It goes
But in
downhill
those
from
days,
there.
he's just kind of a sci-fi hero, and it's fun. It's fun to read, and he's like, I've got to talk to the ants, and Janet's just like, but I want to talk about marriage, and so like it turns out to be kind of this like silly thing. We're going to talk a little bit about a West Coast Avengers story here in a second, and they are the most divorced in that story that two people could possibly be. So it's fascinating how their trajectory has panned out, even just outside of like this conversation.
I didn't read any of his early stuff until I started doing the research for The Nightshade, because I was like, oh, wait, I forgot he had a long lost wife, and that's how we got The Unstoppable Wall. So then I went back and I enjoyed it because it just kind of reminded me of early, Twilight show. There's a movie called Them from the 1950s that I adore, and it's about ants. So it just feels like a fever dream. It's always kind of fun reading those old, like those very early Marvel comics for a lot of the characters that we know today, because everyone's just kind of jazzing about.
I love those old 50s horror movies that influenced so many, like Marvel comics with the giant
Them
monster,
is great.
the hill that comes to life and eats you, Sprag the Living Hill, like all that old shit makes me smile huge. I
It's
think
great.
really fun. Hank Pym gets pulled into the Avengers, obviously. There's an infamous and lengthy history of this character being very unstable, very insecure. Janet marries him while he's having a mental breakdown. And when he wakes up, she's like,
That's
aha,
rough.
I got you before you could say no. And later, there's the infamous domestic violence scene. Things go on from there. Maria is very rarely referenced. And when we're going to jump to this first appearance of Modom, kind of in the 80s in West Coast Avengers, there's a lot of old continuity being brought back in a way where they're kind of tying up a ton of loose ends for this character. Hank is going by Dr. Pym at this point, and he's wearing like a red jumpsuit and carries like
The
little miniature
jacket.
things, like little miniature beans in his pocket that he throws out, and he's like, I
He's
have a big
going
wrench or like an underground base.
midlife crisis all over this guy. He really wants to get back with Janet, and Janet's like,
He's
no. And then
suicidal,
he tries to
then he
date
fucks
like seven
Tigra.
other. And then he's like, but we're gonna like we're like a thing. And Tiger's like, whoa, buddy. Like, yeah, it's funny. He just basically you're watch. I'm sorry to say that it's funny, but it is funny to watch Hank Pym have to deal with the repercussions of all of the things that he's done. And he always goes, oh, I made one mistake and I got ousted from the Avengers. And it's just like, you didn't just make one mistake. That's out of control that you think that that was one mistake that you
You
made.
built a genocidal robot and killed billions. Also, do you remember how the Skrull version of Hank fathered a baby with Tigra? Because that
Like,
happened.
yeah, like Hank. Yeah, this man. And then in the West Coast Avengers is his era to kind of try to get his shit back together. But he's
But
Hank.
now, I for sure would read a Stephanie Williams, a Nadia Van Dyne book. Are you a fan of Hank's daughter, as later revealed through his wife Maria, who went missing?
I sure am. When it was announced that Jeremy Whitley was writing a book, I was already a fan of Princeless, so I immediately checked that out. And I just love her little STEM girl group. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting to go back. And I love when people pull from continuity and try to make it make sense, which is really hard to do in comics. But I love me some Nadia.
Yeah, I've interviewed Jeremy a couple of times. That run was actually really influential for me, along with like Squirrel Girl and Moon Girl, like female-led comics that just like really changed the tone of books for me in a way that made me appreciate kind of a new era of comics. We went from like the bloody early 2000s to like the like let's do happy stories with like feminist superheroes who are young and like enjoy life. Like I really like that era of comic books.
Was rough right before then.
Yes, yeah, there was a rough patch. So jumping back to West Coast Avengers 36, this is a culmination of a story that's several issues long where Hank Pym's fighting a whole bunch of his old foes, trying to track down Maria Trevia.
This guy.
She's still alive, he's led to believe. The West Coast Avengers storm a base and they are manipulated into fighting each other by the Voice of Doom. But Hank Pym finally finds the truth that his dead wife, Maria, is her small body is strapped to a chair under the weight of a brain the size of a couch that has to be suspended in metal and glass while she's sitting there. And it's really quite terrifying. And he goes, Maria, even after all these years, even like this, he knows it is. And he knows horror. But while his senses are reeling, his scientist's mind is assembling the machinery in this awful chamber. Life support. She's not dead. And her body hasn't atrophied. They've given her, so in other words, like she's still hot, even with her giant brain. They've given her physical therapy, and narcotics to keep her alive still. No, no more of that. He disconnects them. Maria, Maria, can you hear me? It's Hank, your husband. Stephanie, let's talk about this reveal of Maria's little skinny body under the giant couch brain.
I mean, I wonder if they're getting therapy because let's just take it back a little bit. The West Coast Avengers, they show up. Now they're fighting each other because of this mysterious voice. And then Hank, of course, is like, oh, wait, love connection. Someone from my past is here. And it just so happens to be the wife that I thought was dead. And I'm still very attracted to her because other than her giant brain, everything else is still there. Which just felt very on the money for Hank, but I just felt bad for her because now we've got this story of a tale as old as time where we don't know what happened to this woman, but clearly she was captured and then experimented on or volunteered, I think as they tried to kind of later retcon in a weird way. But I just found it, I don't know, I just kept thinking the fly, which I know she doesn't turn into a fly or anything like that, but I was thinking just very David Cronenberg of Marvel for this issue to have this woman come out like this. And then, of course, for Hank to try to rectify the situation, but there's nothing to rectify. Like, she's already gone.
So Maria reveals through images projected onto a screen that she was captured, tortured, experimented on. She says, "My brain expanded. Vast new powers opened up for me. But I was a freak. They kept me alive all these years because I became so valuable, but always drugged, Henry." And you have to wonder, he's seeing her brain and thinking, "This is how my brain feels metaphorically." Now
Of
I see it
course.
displayed before me. We get a thought bubble from Hank here, which is fascinating. And I don't know that it's ever really been brought up in continuity ever again. He says, "I studied a man called MODOK when I created artificial intelligence for Ultron." So if we go back to early Avengers, it's continuity that this man who claims he didn't mean
You
to create
did
the evil
what?
being studied MODOK first. That's insane.
You did what? I know. I was thinking that too, just being like, I'm sorry, could you go back just a sec? And he's like, oh yeah, just that one mistake I made. It's just like, you knew that this was gonna go awry. You knew it. I also think it's really funny that he's like, even after all this time, he knows it's her. And then it turns out that it's not really her. It's just like, Hank, you're wrong about everything.
But you see it as like an attempt to give him kind of a happy ending, you know, where like
Yeah,
they're
and
writing
he's
him out of the
tortured.
story and bringing his wife back and like
Yeah.
making him usable. Like, I don't know. She says the communists have been using her to create more threats. So she's like an ant queen. "But now, my love, you've come for me and you can kill me." "No, Maria, no. I went on to become a leading biochemist. I went to the ants. I swear I'll find a way to cure you if it takes the rest of my life." What do these details matter in this moment, man?
He's like, listen, I've been up to a lot of stuff and I want to get you up to date. He doesn't bring up Ultron though.
This is also the storyline where Quicksilver turns like full
Evil,
supervillain
evil.
evil. Like he's been
Yeah.
skirting the line for a while. Later they retcon Maximus as influencing, but he's real bad
Yep.
at this story. So there's a big fight. Maria frees the Avengers from the Voice's mind control, and then Henry leaves the Avengers to focus on curing his wife of her giant brain. There are definite references to the movie Stephanie just referenced, the old 50s horror film. Stephanie, do you want to talk about, have you seen that movie recently? Do you recall?
No, I haven't seen it in so
Oh.
long. I went on like I was like searching Tubi and Pluto for it and then like gave up and then it just kind of fell to the wayside. The original Fly I haven't seen in a long time, but the remake with by David Cronenberg I definitely definitely watched. I watched that while pregnant, eating a Snickers bar. So that's where I was mentally. But in the movie, you have the scientist who is trying to, he's working on this machine where you can transport your body, kind of like this thing, Star Trek, beaming down, that type of whole thing. And a fly gets in there with him as he materializes on the other side. And now he's got fly DNA. And then his body just morphs into this very hideous thing while he's trying to like get to know this woman. And it just goes down south for him and for her. And everyone's having a bad time, especially that fly.
That movie is also heavily referenced in the character, the human fly, who is a truly horrifying Marvel supervillain. Just like really the worst, like blech, gross, gross, gross. Sarah, do you want to
The
talk to us?
original fly is great too. I just want to throw in a note is it's really fun. Vincent Price is in it as a guy. And it's awesome.
So Dom. Maria was not referred to as Modom in that first appearance. It's just the return of who we think is Maria Trevia, but it's not. And then she's back when they do. So Solo Avengers is a book that's running two stories every issue. And it's kind of like a talent tryout book in the way that like Marvel Comics Presents was. Like, come in and try like an 8-page story out. They're giving a lot of like individual character stories of Avengers that you don't expect to see. And there's a lot of really random stories throughout Solo Avengers of like villains you'd never, ever expect to see again. A lot of them have never been seen again. But in Solo Avengers 16 is where we get the sinister secret of Sodom. Sarah, tell us about it.
This is definitely robot Hank Pym. We've got Hawkeye, we've got Mockingbird, and they're having, once again, it's just total relationship drama. Anybody who thinks the X-Men are all drama, the Avengers are all drama for sure. But they find Sodom, and of course, she is happy and proud to say what her name is today because it's a good one. And then she goes, "I am Sodom, a specialized organism designed for aggressive maneuvers." And Hank, "No, it isn't possible." And she looks so evil.
So he
And
realizes he built her like this hover chair. He's been hanging out. His evil robot is there. And he realizes in this moment it's not Maria. Like I was tricked into like helping this woman. So you kind of get the idea that she was trapped. This character, we'll learn more about her origins, but she's trapped in this chair and she like mentally manipulated events to get Hank to get her so she could be removed from the chair and like more mobile, because now she has a hover chair with like her giant brain floating in a jar in the air, which is again very horrible.
I had no identity before AIM created me. Now I am so damn. They say it like multiple times on one page. She's like, "No, that's my name." It's
And
funny.
it's a wild retcon. I'm kind of not sure why this story was needed, but now we have a new supervillain, and it's
It
so
comes out of
damn,
nowhere.
it's so damn unnecessary.
Nice.
It
You
gave
can see
Quasar
Hank.
something to do.
Yes, it gives Quasar something to do. And Hank is actually gets to have some action sequences. And then, of course, what I mean, everything explodes. That's how every AIM story ends, is everything has to go down in flames because they're just like, "Okay, let me get out of here." That's AIM's MO, basically.
A
They're like,
slight
"This is too
tangent,
much."
a slight tangent, but I'd love to hear from both of you in one sentence your thoughts on the Hawkeye Mockingbird marriage.
Yeah, I like to see them fight with each other. Clint's wrong about everything, I guess. Bobby's right about everything.
Barbara Morse, feminist icon, super scientist, kick-ass Olympic athlete who like married that hot, pretty guy she met in the bar. And he's so hot and he's so good in bed, but he's dumb as rocks. And it was never gonna work.
And he's always arguing with her, and she's just like, "Ah, this was hot for 5 minutes, and now I have to deal with the repercussions."
And then
And
there was
he's
that
just
time she
like,
got, and there's that time she got stuck in the Wild West and like the Phantom Rider raped her, and then she let him die. And then Hawkeye was like, "You whore, how could you cheat on me? And how could you kill a man?" And
no.
it's rough.
He's rough for a long time, I think. A lot of people are like, "Oh no, now like he's a totally different character." And it's like, I think I'm okay with that because he used to just break up every meeting by being like, "I don't have to follow rules. I'm like gonna start breaking things." And then you're just like, "Why is this guy on the team again?"
He has a full identity crisis in 1973 when he realizes the Scarlet Witch loves a robot and not him. And then he like beats up Daredevil because he tries to get Black Widow back. It's he's not a great character. His
He's like
fragile ego.
wilding for a long time, and he still is wilding in this.
Stephanie, are you a Hawkeye fan?
I am not. Well, maybe just a little thanks to Matt Fraction, but no. All the every like when I go back and I read the older comics, every time he shows up, I'm just like, this guy, because he's just a jerk. For you know, he wakes up and he says, "I want my apple juice," and whose blocks can I kick over? He's like a toddler, just with a toddler with arrows, which is not safe for anyone, not even himself.
He's a hot, hot toddler. I know some of these people in my real life, and they're so pretty and so dumb. And we love you for it. We're gonna jump to Quasar number 9. I love the Quasar series. This is Mark Grenwald's baby outside of Captain America. On the cover of Quasar 9, it says, "In the clutches of Modom, the Mind Marauder." So we have a new name. She's like MODOK, but she has lipstick and like extendo metal arms, like Inspector Gadget style, and like spit trails in her mouth, and her headband is like crackling with psychic energy, and she's choking Quasar out, but also it kind of looks like she's fucking him just a little bit. If you look at this cover, this story is called Have Brain, Will Travel. This is like they're really putting a lot of energy into AIM in the 90s. We talked about this in the Super Adaptoid trial and the MODOK trials a little bit. There's new weapons, new goals. They have a new headquarters, like an island nation on Boca Caliente, and they're under the leadership of Alessandro Brannix, who actually turns out to be a Super Adaptoid later. Don't worry about it. They're having this like weapons expo, which is a famous story where all the supervillains get a cameo in the audience as they're looking at the new weapons being unleashed. Maybe AIM just does this on YouTube these days. MODOK has been hunted down and killed by the Serpent Society. Go see my Princess Python episode for more on that. And Brannix is in front of the Weapons Expo group and says, "But let me take this opportunity to introduce you to the next generation of MO technology, MODOM." And you get Kylie Minogue coming out and singing MODOM, MODOM as he's like doing this little presentation. That's my headcanon here. "The mobile organism designed for aggressive maneuvers. Care to tell our distinguished guests a little something about yourself?" MODOM says, "As Mr. Brannix stated, I am the latest product of our biomechanical research. I am fully equipped with a jet-assisted hover chair, telescoping titanium steel arms, a laser-guided plasma cannon, and energon screens. Furthermore, my enhanced cranium contains 10,000 megabyte computer as well as a 100-meter range synaptic disruptor generator. And I wear lipstick." I added that last part on myself, but Siri was ordered to pretty herself up here. And Brannix says, "MODOM will be available for certain special assignments." Crossbones is in the crowd. If you guys have Crossbones thoughts, he goes, "If Humpty Dumpty is through playing show and tell, I got a question. You got any cosmic cubes here for sale, or are we wasting our time?" And then Minerva and Atlas from the Kree Empire show up. They want the quantum bands that Quasar has. So AIM hires MODOM out to retrieve them. She gets dropped out of a ship over the Statue of Liberty, flies around with her chair smoking into the atmosphere, fires on Quasar, who is in the head of the statue. "You have something I want, stripling, something you shall soon surrender." And Quasar goes, "Who the heck is that? Looks like MODOK, but I heard he was dead. Besides, this creature is a woman, I think." I just gave him like the most Boy Scout 13-year-old voice, I just realized. And I think that kind of matches, if I'm honest. We get insight into how the new MODOM sees the world. Always computerized piles of data, color and movement, human behavior. Commence spectral analysis of energy emissions of targets' quantum bands. Flood of data defies this unit's computational power. With the target synaptic responses impaired by my my word, it's too early to read science words, my neuronic broadcast, I can proceed to remove the power objects for further study. Quasar lobbies some light constructs at her. The stripling is more determined than I'd anticipated. After deflecting these projectiles, I will have to reset my synaptic disruption power pattern to maximize its effect. She stuns him, grabs his arms in her like metal extend arms, and then like Quasar cuts her arms off. Like, can you imagine? She's just having a day at work. She's firing mind blasts at him. He's knocking them back at her with like constructs of mirrors. "Okay, ma'am," and I use the term loosely. No need, Quasar. "Now that I'm no longer trapped in your little mouse trap," and he knocks her upside the head with like a light baseball bat. "I will kill you for that, whelp." She hits him with mental energy, gets her to stop by trying to cut off her oxygen with a force wall, and then he drops her off at the vault, and AIM is super pissed. And this is the first official appearance of MODOM. It's kind of rad. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So when I read this story, I was like, okay, one, I wonder if this convention is taking place at the Javits Center. I know it's not, but that was fresh on my mind. And then two, the stocks, they went down because you unveiled this new product and she failed on the very first day, even though she was programmed to not fail. I don't know how Alessandro still had a job after that, because that sounds like a meeting with the board and they're letting him go with a nice severance.
He like spent the whole budget flying random supervillains out and sit in his audience.
I like that Grunwald likes a female villain. I don't
Yeah.
know. He's pretty fun about putting these like kind of bonkers women in and being like, here, fight this himbo.
Do you guys feel like Modom is in any form of control at this point, or is she obeying programming specifically?
It's hard to
So,
say, right? Because
yeah.
like she's not, we don't know too much about who she is. Like even if we find out like what her actual identity is, then we don't really know what she was like before, because it's any character that didn't really have a lot of page time before. I think it'd be fun if she was just real shitty as a person and became this person, because MODOK is like a horror story because they just take some guy who's like a totally bumbling normal dude and like they're like, have this horrible thing happen to you. But to me it always seems like Modam's pretty thrilled to be here. So I don't know.
I'll call you ma'am, and I use that term loosely.
I love that that's the superhero that she has to fight, because he is such a himbo and a Boy Scout on top of that. And she, again, her programming at least is giving her no nonsense, and she's not here for any of that. So it kind of sucks that he is able to defeat her in such a, I don't know, like just such a quasar way, which just feels very disrespectful that this is the first superhero you fight and you lose because he rips your arms off. I hated it for her.
But it's a female MODOK fight around the head of the Statue of Liberty. I forgot to reference this. We do talk about it in the MODOK trial, but there's this a mid-70s story, I think, where Kate Waynesboro gets turned into someone called Ms. MODOK for an issue, and she has
Yeah, I love that one.
a very 1950s coiffed hairstyle, where
Yeah.
this MODOM, they just took like real MODOK and like slapped some lipstick on it. It's a very
Yeah.
version.
The Miss MODOK story is really fun, really bonkers. It's Bill Mantlo, Incredible Hulk era, and I love that era. I'm not gonna say it's perfect, but I love a lot of the stuff in there, and I think that the Miss MODOK story is really fun.
Now, at this point, there has been no tie between the Maria Trevaya or Sodom stories and this version of Modom. But we next see Modom during the the Superior storyline, where we have a cruise ship full of female supervillains having a power pageant. This is the time where Captain America and Paladin get like put into estrogen baths by the Deadly Nightshade. Sarah, tell us about Superior. I know this is a character you may have some opinions on.
Oh yeah, no, she's really fun, honestly. Like she, I always forget that she's all over Grunwald's Captain America. She's in it so much. She's just all over it. So I appreciate seeing her. She's got a big woman sign on her, the whole front of her body, which I find really amusing. And it's also, there's a reading of it that's just like, oh sure, yeah, she wants to kill all of the other people on Earth and like kidnap the men and use them as, like breeding, whatever. It's like, oh yeah, that's what feminists do, Mark Grunwald. Like, it's silly, but it's also fun, I guess. So I always have a lot of fun reading her. And she shows up just to be such like a wild card, I guess. So I like her for those reasons. But Stephanie, you wrote about her before. So what do you think about her?
I love her. I love her so much that I actually wanted to use her for the Nightshade story. That's actually how I ended up making the pivot to Modam. But Marvel was like, yeah, we can't do that. And I was like, wait, what do you mean you can't do it? It's your character. So I don't know if there was like legal stuff going on with her, which I find very interesting. I would like to know the backstory on that. But I love her. Like, I wrote a whole thing about her being, if we just could have taken her plan, it just went back to, just workshopped it a little bit with more than just her. It could have worked out a little bit, but she didn't do that. I do do love that she tried to give everyone a job, though. I do love that she, like, how cool is it to have like this meetup of all these badass women, and we're on a cruise ship like that? AIM's not doing that. SHIELD isn't even doing that, and they're supposed to be the good guys. Like that in itself, kind of sold me on her, and she almost could have won, but she let her hubris, as most villains do, get in the way.
She has like two sections. She has like two sections of continuity. There's the early Femazon stuff with Mark Grenwald, and then later she like joins Norman Osborn's like white supremacist secret empire. Like, let's take over the government, and that's a way worse version of her.
Yeah, I can kind of understand why Marvel's like,
I was like, I don't want to do that era. I want to go back to the feminist. Like, I don't, in fact, that part, don't even know they exist. So, like, let's just act like that doesn't, and let me do the other cool stuff.
Yeah, where she's just bonkers. That's kind of the thing that's fun about her, I think, is that she's just like, and then I'll rule the world. And you're like, with feminism, is that what we're trying to do here? Okay, I guess I'm in. This is an island of women, so I guess I'll hang out. But like, are you sure that this is, yeah, workshop that plan maybe.
Wait, like there's even a mall that they go to. Again, like she said, you know what? Yeah, from the cruise ship to like this really nice mall. This is what feminists would want. And sort of kinda.
Sort of, kind of. It's like you're right, you're wrong. It's like whenever Roy Thomas creates Valkyrie and she's like, up against the wall, male chauvinist pigs. And you're just like, that rules, actually. I know that it's not supposed to. I'm not supposed to read it like this, but that rules.
The power pageant from this storyline lives on in my brain in infamy because it's delightful, because you see a lot of random characters. There's a similar one of these during the AIM Weapons Expo where you see a bunch of old characters like fighting it out, and Captain America has to fight like a sumo guy and like Mad Dog and like Ramrod up on the stage. Grenwald loves these old obscure villains, which I love. I also used to write for the Marvel Appendix, which is where I got recruited for the handbooks. And this is one of those scenes in the power pageant where we had to have like a detailed spreadsheet about every character that shows up because it's not colored and there's like 100 characters in one double page spread, and you're like, oh, which supervillain? Because we have to reference every appearance for the encyclopedias. Exhausting. The SS Superior has been commissioned. Superior has spent millions of dollars getting every supervillain she has ever heard of who is a woman onto her ship, and Modom is sent to catch some of them and like bring them back. It's very Pokemon. Superior wants everyone there. Every character is on this ship, including Frenzy and Nightshade, who are characters that we love, and some random like X-Men themed and adjacent villains like Dragonfly and Arclight, and like there's a whole bunch of characters here. Modom is sent to retrieve members of the Serpent Society, and she only takes the girl. She like kicks Puff Adder out, and Anaconda's really mad about that. Like, what about my boyfriend? Then they get back. Modom has to fight Captain America and Paladin in a ship that like spits them out, and they're in the ocean. And like, of course, they're not going to win this fight. They end up captured and nearly turned into women by Tilda Johnson, who we adore. There, she gets called Humpty when Paladin like shoots the jewel on for her forehead, and she says, "Insipid gunman, you damaged my converter crystal." And she gets shot in the tailpipe and has to like skim across the water to safety. A whole bunch of shit happens on that boat. Madame's not really part of it, but we get some really fun action aerial sequences with her in this little storyline. And I love that she like found a little place here.
I just adore it. It's very felt like very James Bond-ish for Cap in a way that this villain is very James Bond-ish. So it was giving me 1970s James Bond, which I adored, because it's just a batshit crazy story. One, we got a cruise ship, we got a mall. We've got all these, again, badass women on the ship at the same time. And Cap's girl, well, were they dating? They were dating, right?
Diamond back. It's on again, off
Yeah,
again.
yeah.
Yeah, dumb. Yeah, it's like on again, off again type of thing. So you got a little messy relationship intrigue there. And of course, like the end goal is to turn them into women, which doesn't work out, but also made me curious as to like what that would look like.
And what
So,
that, why? Also,
right?
you're like,
And like,
what's
also,
that
why?
for?
Yeah. It's whimsy. And I know it shouldn't be whimsy, but it kind of is whimsy in a way that it reminds me of like how comics were before we got to the early aughts, where it was just, we're just telling stories. We're telling stories that don't make any sense and it's okay, but we're just here to have a fun time. And at the end of the day, like the hero's gonna save the day. And this villain who is a villain just because she is, there is no like tragic situation behind this that made her the way that she is. She just like doesn't like men, and that's okay. And she just wants to get rid of them. It's just, she's a little genocidal. That's all right, but that's just her end. That's her end goal, and that's it. And so in that way, it's like it's whimsy, and I know probably isn't the best way to describe it, but that's the way that it felt to me.
Whimsy is a great word for it. I still do not believe in this storyline that Modam is entirely in charge of herself. I still think she's going by programming. There's like a part of her personality that's trying to like reassert itself, which we don't really see happen until Stephanie Williams writes this character, unless that was also part of her programming. I'm not quite sure. But she comes back briefly in Captain America 412 through 414. Modam means murder. She gets another cover. Superia attacks AIM Island and Modam has to fight her because Superia only like licensed Modam from AIM for a while. Like, she's not actually loyal to this feminist cause. She just was taking a job. There's a moment where Superia says, "You're a traitor to your sex, Modam. You are content to serve men when you could help rule my new feminist world order." And Modam replies, "I may have been born woman, but I have transcended such petty distinctions. You would be wise to not allow your radical politics to cloud the business sense, Superia. Now I tire of this exercise, therefore you are subdued." He takes her in bonds, delivers her to Brannix, and this is the super adaptoid reveal. It's a kind of a silly, fun little story, but she gets her ass kicked in the end because Captain America crashes a ship into her, smashes her jewel, and then like pokes her in the eye to get Superia away. And that, my friends, is how you defeat Modam if you are Captain America. Now we get the big reveal after this. Sarah, will you tell us a little bit about Iron Man 296 and 297?
Yeah, we're in the middle of a trade war, or the return of Tony Stark, essentially, after he has been not Iron Man for a while. We've, you know, for whatever reason, because this happens periodically in Iron Man comics, and he's lost control of a bunch of the suits. She shows up to just wreck his shit as usual, but also Omega Red is in this, so just like the two kind of nastiest, most spiteful villains just kind of show up to ruin everything. Iron Man jumps into battle against AIM, and of course, as we know, Modam is tight with AIM, and they have a nice little brawl. I want to mention that I think that the art in these two is really good. It's great for an Iron Man comic, especially because all of the metal looks awesome. You get this very cool, like, I don't really honestly know how to describe it, but it fits the kind of like horror theme of Modam really well, I think, because she looks like a big scary monster. And they fight each other, but then Omega Red shows up and he's like, I'm gonna fight her.
Well, he recognizes her.
She's someone else.
He recognizes her from her KGB file as an agent named Olinka Barankova, and she doesn't know who she is, but someone who, like, she's someone who personally betrayed Omega Red in a previous, like, existence before he was put into suspended animation. So he's there for revenge. He says, like, "I'm here to kill you." She's also had a big upgrade. She can, like, sprout guns out of the side of her chair now, which is kind of a fun reveal. An Omega Red Modam fight is something you didn't know you needed.
Really good dialogue.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, she has great dialogue in this. "What a lovely complex mind you have, Iron Man." And then goes, "I believe I'll peel it like an onion, layer by agonizing layer." I just love it. She has him down, and then Omega Red is just like, and it's like, that might have been like the worst move a supervillain has ever made, to be like, "Oh, well, she's got Iron Man down, and I think she's about to take him out, but
There's
I'm
a moment
break
also
this up so that we can both get beaten by Iron Man.
There's a moment also where she comments on, she goes, "Your carbonadium coils are unusual, I'll admit," which is hilarious because nobody really knows how the fuck his powers work or like what that fucking carbonadium
those are weird.
Is. Don't really know.
Prepare for combat. I just love her. She's so fun.
So when he finally corners her,
that's Modam basically
tries running
it.
Away. He says, "It was your name." I'm not going to do a Russian accent. "It was your name when you betrayed me to the NKVD all those years ago, and the name you are listed under in AIM's personnel files." She says, "You've been deceived. It's standard procedure for AIM's administrative records to be falsified." "I don't believe you. Flimsy lies will not save you, nor will your ebbing mental powers, which grow ever more feeble as I drain the life from your grotesque body. And she kind of like sizzles a little bit before Iron Man intervenes. So there's this idea that she was a person
Yes.
who lost her identity, who she realizes here that she had a life before all of this, but Iron Man just like punches her in the head and she's like horribly defeated here. It's a bizarre origin story. It's very
Because
strange.
I don't know if this is real or not, but yeah, no, it's him. He saves her life at first, and then, of course, Modam has no gratitude in her entire body whatsoever, and completely tries to take advantage whenever once Omega Red's out of the picture. Once again, you might have teamed up with each other. It seems like that should have been a better. Anyway, Iron Man pops her in that gym, and it's just like, wait a second. So you're super smart. Why is the gym like right in the most punchable spot of your body, though? Like, that's what I'm curious about. That seems like a design flaw. So this is just a personal note, but I would say this is really fun. Her fight against Tony Stark is really fun, and the art is fun. It's a really neat two-issue stint with her.
And all of these characters are now tied together in a very weird way. It's the Maria Trevaya with the giant brain, and then it's the mobile Maria Trevaya who manipulated Hank Pym into like making her mobile. She's then transformed by AIM into this giant MODOK creature through like the MODOK process, whatever the fuck that is. She's an operative for a long time. She works for Superia. Now she has been revealed to be an old KGB agent who has a history with Omega Red. She returns one more time in Captain America 440, where she's like kind of in this like chonky battle chair with like big pink tenderly arms. And she gets some fun dialogue. I would advise you to vacate the premises at once. I have telemetrically begun the unlocking sequence. I am the mental organism designed for aggressive maneuvers. Since I went online, I have been AIM's most advanced cybernetic operative, having undertaken 416 missions with a 0.92 efficiency parameter. I have never flinched in the line of duty. And she's really scared of what is ahead because she knows AIM sees her as expendable. And this idea of this woman who lost her identity, I don't know why that story was introduced in Iron Man, except as a reason to pull Omega Red in, but it's kind of a fun and wild ride as she gets ready for her Stephanie Williams treatment. Stephanie, what are your thoughts on her origins up to this point and the Olenka Barankova reveal?
What a mess. And because it was a mess, I was like, oh, I can fix her. Or I can fix her. I can make it make sense. Because that last appearance where you see, like, oh, wait, there is some actual humanity trying to break out of this coding. I was like, oh, okay, well, there's a story there. So, like, let's dig a little deeper. So as tragic, because her death is a little tragic, because she doesn't want to do it. Her sensors are screaming for her to not and to abort the mission because of self-preservation, but she still fights through even that. And that to me was like, okay, well, there is some autonomy there, something that has been questionable. Do you have that or do you not have that anymore? And then, of course, with Omega Red spilling the tea that she is a Linka, I was like, oh, okay, so let's actually make this history even more confusing because why not? And then
So
that's where I came in.
at the end of Cap 440, she explodes basically, and it's like a Red Skull thing. Don't worry about it. MODOK always had the George Tarleton side of him. She had to come from somewhere, is someone saying something. If she's not Maria, then who is she? She's not a robot. So Stephanie, tell us about the story you and Hector Barros did. I was so shocked to see MODOK on the page. It was a delight.
So in the story, it's fallen Logan Lewis, the new Nightshade, as she is trying to find a job, and she finds out that sometimes if you reveal that you're a superhero live through live stream, because people are recording you saving the day, that jobs might not want to hire you because you are a liability, especially science jobs, because supervillains are popping up all the time. Finally gets a job, and she gets one because, of course, the person who hires her has other plans in mind. And part of those plans involve Modam, her aunt, who she wants to bring back. So Modam comes bursting out of this kind of cryo situation, and this is where we pick up her story where she was going after the Cosmic Cube. The way that we kind of wrote Logan's powers is that she got her powers through a derivative of the Cosmic Cube, which is ISO-8. And Modam, her last programming is that she had to go after the Cosmic Cube. So she like pretty much senses those energy signatures coming off of Logan, and that's why she ends up attacking her.
Which is also a fun dig because MODOK's origins, where he was originally designed to analyze the cosmic cube as well, is how it works for him. It's interesting.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, never didn't have it. And I was like, I planned this all along. Really, I didn't. I just kind of looked up and that ended up happening. I go through, and because her history was just all over the place, I think it's an issue, part three of the story. I do kind of like this recap. So everything that we just went over, I kind of like take everybody through her history and show just how convoluted it is and how difficult it is to tell that, hey, is this creature, does she actually have any autonomy, or has it always been programming? That is the question at hand.
So
And now her niece.
you give the big reveal that she's not actually Alenka Barankova. There's a different personality. Why the choice to change her identity?
I kind of think I went that route because I said, well, if I'm gonna give her a new life, because I feel like Omega Red was like he was mistaken. That he it's Omega Red. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So in that regard, I was like, let me switch it up. But I wanted to give her kind of like this fresh start so that even after the story was done, if she wanted to go be evil, she could. But at least with this new name, this new person, this new story, whatever she did moving forward would be all her and not a question of is it programming or is it not. Now we know that it's not. And she has more autonomy to be evil or to be good or to be an anti-hero or whatever it was. But it was important to me to just kind of give her basically this fresh start to be the best modem she could ever be.
And the origin you give, her real name is Marcella Antonov. She's married to Colonel Alexei Antonov in Russia. AIM causes their car to crash, and Marcella gets badly injured, and AIM takes her in and turns her into this kind of new creature. So she kind of lost her happiness, and it's almost like in your story, she's figuring out who she is or who she was. The thought automatically crosses my mind, like, oh, is this another layer of her programming? It's going to be interesting to see who chooses to follow up with that. If anyone does. Now, in the handbook, something baffling about this character, she's only shown up, I think, 17 times, like just a little more than Azaladade, if we're using Connor's speak. But this is a character that, if we were being official, I would have to write it out this way. Her first appearance was in West Coast Avengers Volume 2, Number 36, in May 1988, as Maria Trevaya. Her next first appearance is Solo Avengers 16 in November 1988, same year as Sodom. Then she gets a first appearance in Iron Man Number 296, which is September 1993, or her first appearance as Alenka Barankova. Then we would have to list Marvel Voices Infinity Comic number 72 by Stephanie Williams in 2023 as her first appearance as her new identity. So it's baffling when you do all that. Like, we had to keep these detailed notes, and that's a lot of identity change for one character who does not have a lot of appearances. She's been through a little bit, you guys.
She has. And I think that's kind of what like endeared me to her. It's always interesting, especially with female characters, where their history is tragic, but also just hella convoluted. And it's just like, hey, can she either just be bad or good or something? It's just always this thing where it feels like the role that she or these characters end up taking is one that they were put on and not necessarily one that they got to. Kind of the way that I felt about her when I ended up making my pivot from covering Suspiria to going to her. So yeah, I was like, I know I'm making this a little bit worse by giving her a new name, but the hope there was to, I don't know, like give her a fresh start so someone can, really push and make her own thing and not just this female version of MODOK, which she never really was, but that's the way that she appears to be because of the lack of history.
Or we talked about like that Happy Girls era of comics, and like Squirrel Girl loves to go help a villain instead of punch him in the face. And Nightshade gets that story here, right? She sees Modom as someone who's struggling, and Modom gets left in charge of a company at the end. I almost wonder if, in your intent to clean it up, if we're starting like a gag for Modom where every time someone writes her, she gets another new identity.
I mean, I personally would not even be mad if that was a thing because she's already got it like set up that that could be the thing. So that could be like her party trick that her tax season must be terrible for her too because of that. But
We could bring her into the X-Men with the reveal that this is what Candy Southern became. It's been
oh
Candy
my
the
God.
whole time.
You're gonna have some upset fans, but it's
Oh,
fine. fun.
But also, wouldn't that be kind of great too?
It would be kind of great.
For Nightshade, she is not necessarily, it's kind of a reluctant hero, right? She got these powers and it's kind of like, well, I have to do something for them. And whenever I get a character like that, I never want to make them, I don't know, be like the end all be all when they may meet a quote unquote villain. Especially someone with like such a messy background as Modam, where they're not really deciding, oh, well, you are outright evil, so I must banish you. I just feel like these newer heroes, if they're kind of Gen Z facing or whatever, they would have a little bit more compassion and, I don't know, curiosity to find out like, why are you this way? And once I figure out why you're this way, then I can make my decision from there instead of just being so reactive to what's happening. Happening.
As we're wrapping up, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what's the MODOM story that we need. MODOK has had some kind of interesting stories. If you guys remember in Secret Avengers, where he like allies himself with Maria Hill and the Avengers because he's kind of in love with her, but he's still doing the super scientist thing. It'd almost be fun to see MODOM in some sort of odd story like that, where it's kind of a weird, unrequited love story, but she's getting more agency and has some kind of secret plot lines. She would make a great woman behind the screen in a, like a superhero or supervillain book, but I could also see her being like the bad miss in excuse me, the bad bitch in charge. I also love Stephanie where you left her as like the leader of a company and you know that company getting involved in some kind of nonsense. She's got almost a Madeline Pryor energy for me in that way where she's like, you know, fuck y'all, I'm tired of playing by your rules. I'm gonna live for me now and I don't care about the rest.
Oh, I need a marriage of convenience to happen. So, because she's running this company now, there's maybe some other, I don't know, some very hot guy who's running another company and tries to do like this takeover. But it doesn't work out, and they decide that the better solve here would be a marriage of convenience. So we just kind of get that the two of them running their companies merge together, and they eventually fall in love, and that's what we have. So Marcel gets another chance at love, and we have this thing that we don't often get, where we have this woman who objectively would be called unattractive with this really hot guy who loves her for everything that she is.
If I were gonna write a Modam story, it would just be like balls to the wall body horror, just a Cronenberg movie and a comic book, frankly. Because you brought up Cronenberg, you brought up the classic stuff. I feel like MODOK is like classic 50s, and then once you get into Modam, we really are in the Cronenberg era, kind of. And
It's like
so,
the
hey, why
feminist
not a
version of classic 50s.
Yeah, like let's get into, well, because like I think of The Brood, right? Like
Oh
where,
my
because
God,
you brought up The
yes.
Fly and I'm like, The Brood too, where like it's just this like monstrous woman who, which I love. Like I think that that's like probably one of my favorite Cronenberg movies. But then, you know, now Brandon Cronenberg's making great movies. So maybe
Oh,
we need
is
a
he?
new, maybe we need a new update that's kind of modernizing the body horror, I guess, a little bit. But yeah, it's just, it's horrifying. I think it's a horrifying story. I love everything about like the MODOK stories too, where like they're just like, look, he's got a wife now and like all of that. And I think that like there's such a great spot for like all of those stories. I love them. But if it were me, just because of who I am, I'd be like, let's just make it grisly, gross body horror,
I
basically,
want to
and
read it.
figure it out. I want to read yours. I mean,
You guys can team up.
we're
We
gonna
played
team up.
this. We played this on the trial. I'm gonna ask you this question in closing, simply because of face size. Stephanie, if you'll start here. Fuck, marry, kill, MODOK, Sugar Man, Arnim Zola.
Ooh, kill MODOK because he's just a jerk. Marry, ooh, it's a toss-up between those two. Can I go either or? It just depends on the day.
You can switch husbands every other day. Sugar Man
Yes.
one day, Arnim Zola the next. We
Yes.
quantified on the trial that MODOK's kind of the most heroic of those three, weirdly, which is a wild thing to
I
say.
know, right?
Kill Sugar Man. I hate that man. Kill his ass. And if you don't kill him dead, he's coming back. So kill him dead. And then I would say, like, I guess fuck Zola. And then marry MODOK just because I love him. I mean, I don't know how much I would actually really enjoy being married to him, but it would never be a dull moment.
You know, do you know who I want? You know how they have that Mallory Book awesome android romance in the She-Hulk comics? I want Modam's boyfriend to be the super adaptoid, and he can turn himself really hot, and they just really love each other at a deep level. I love the
I
super
want
adaptoid.
that.
That would be
Yeah.
adorable.
Yep.
I want
That's
it.
good. That's
All right,
good.
friends. This has been a genuine delight. Thank you for spending an hour with me on this random character that I'm very fond of, and I'm very fond of the both of you. Stephanie, I was chatting with Al Ewing in an interview recently, and he talked about Magneto's tired era, and I talked about how you love to write it like a tired character.
I do. I really do.
Makes me smile. Where can people find you both online? And is there anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out the first Wednesday in August. Let's go, Stephanie, then Sarah.
So you can find me at Steph underscore I underscore Will on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. Some more of My Little Pony. The ponies almost broke me when I wrote the series, but I had such a fun time. Misty is the star of this. If you love the movie Jumanji or just board games in general, and just, you know, little genies coming out and doing weird stuff, you'll love this story. I believe number two will be out by the time you listen to this episode, and then a week or two later, issue three. Please check out Absolute Power, Task Force 6. I am writing the Amazons again, and we've got a little bit of a very dangerous game happening. Or if you've seen the movie The Pest, that's also happening too in that story.
Stephanie, Marvel calls you and says, we want you to write a 4-issue limited series on a solo X-Men character. Who's your top choice?
Frenzy.
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, nice.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm glad she's an X-Factor. I'm glad she's
Yes.
not probably falling away. Sarah.
Yes, you can. Well, very recently I tried my hand at Sword and Sorcery for the first time in the Profane Altars collection. There's this new anthology. It has a gorgeous cover by Jeffrey Catherine Jones, who was, as many people know, one of the greatest fantasy artists of all time. The rights were procured. It's fine. but gorgeous, gorgeous cover. It has incredible stories in it as well. The character who I wrote, I'm currently pitching a comic about, so people can, and if it doesn't turn into a comic, it's going to turn into books, or it's going to turn into all of it. So I'm going to be diving a lot more into Sword and Sorcery, it sounds like, but it all starts in Profane Altars, baby. You can go to my website, Sarah Century, and sign up for my newsletter is the best way to keep tabs on me. I'm on Instagram somewhat, but I don't want to post any of my work on there for some reason. So I'm just telling people, please sign up for the newsletter. That's where you'll get actual information from me pretty much. And you could check out Best Issue Ever, which is so fun. And Chad was on it. Stephanie's inevitably going to be on it. So
Yes.
we just talk about our favorite comics of all time. And the most recent one, the one actually as we're recording this, the one that's going up today is with Demanda Martini talking about Excalibur number 71. But there's just been a million bajillion, and there's many more to come. So
You're such a blast. Same question. Marvel calls you. You get a 4-issue limited series on an X-Men character. Who's your choice?
oh God. It's just like it's so hard to figure this out. Maybe honestly, like I would have said Rachel Summers for a really long time, but I actually think that she's doing really well in a direction that I didn't expect for her. So I think that she should just keep on going in that direction. So I'm gonna have to say, who? Honestly, maybe Aurora from Alpha Flight, because I
Ooh,
don't
yeah.
think she's been treated too good, frankly. And I would like to establish a few things, because I think every time there's an Aurora story, somebody goes, oh, well, we've just got to fix her, right? Like, if we just like fix her mental health issues, then she'll be okay. And it's like, that's not really how it works, as anybody would know. But also, it's a boring story because that's what we see every single time with her. So I gotta say, just like giving the world a definitive Aurora story, because we have definitive North Star stories. And I think it's a huge bummer that people have let her fall by the wayside, actually.
Aurora and Fang, perhaps.
Thanks. Please.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos, but the three of you are, excuse me, the two of you are welcome to follow me if you don't already.
I'm like,
Three
is
of you
Mo
at the
Dam here?
No, yes, three of you
Was
is what
Mo
I
Dam
say
in
on my normal shows
the
because there's always three. The next episode out on the Patreon after this is going to feature an interesting categorical story. We're calling it the Hydra Super Agents. I have Gregory Wright and Dan Chichester joining me. They wrote a ton of Baron Strucker crazy Hydra stuff in the 90s. And we're going to be talking a lot about the resurgence of Hydra storylines when it comes to superhero fiction and the bizarre attempts they keep using at making this a supervillain terror group. It's going to be an interesting conversation. Out on the main show, we're getting ready to launch into the Captain America Secret Empire storyline, which features the X-Men quite prominently. The next episode will feature Captain America and the Falcon number 172, which is a Banshee in Nashville story. It's very largely overlooked. My guests on that episode are going to be the long-term X-Men editor Mike Martz, as well as the aforementioned Jeremy Whitley, and my friend Gil Barron is joining us. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you so much to Stephanie and Sarah for spending your Monday morning with me. We'll see you all back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane's Patreon.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.